want to do with the Pliny. Number 16, I wrote these notes back in 2004. So at that time in Jan and I's life, we were not introduced or fully understand the world of narcissism. But this guy, Dothan Okora, is a classic case of a narcissist. And so we'll kind of work on this. Let's go and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us understand this, and I do pray that you have certain principles laid out in Proverbs about scorners, which would be akin to the word that we call narcissist or sociopaths. And I just pray that you'd help us to respond properly around these situations, these type of people. And it's definitely becoming an epidemic. And it's amazing how it's people can develop a mindset like this. And I just pray you'd help us learn from Cora, from this record, this account, and that we might know how to respond properly to certain situations. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, as far as this Cora goes, if what helped Jan and I when we kind of understood this world of narcissism is online on YouTube. There's a lady that specializes in this topic, and she's called Little Shaman. Doesn't sound real well, Little Shaman. But she definitely specializes in this idea. Now, since then, she was one of the best ones online at that time when we first needed this information. Now I'm seeing there's quite a few that analyzes narcissism. Okay, so you have in the psychology world, you have it's narcissism and a sociopath are basically on a similar. But a psychopath would be in the criminal realm. So a sociopath would be somebody that they have a grandiose view of themselves. They don't know how to love. They don't know how to empathize. And any people in their influence are used as tools, like a hammer, a screwdriver, a wrench. Okay, and when that tool is out of their control, then they react. Now, most of the time, these people can hide their viewpoint unless they're challenged. When they're challenged is when you're actually, to a narcissist, okay, to the wife of a narcissist, everybody thinks this person is amazing, but then she sees the reality of it. Okay, or vice versa. Okay, vice versa, it can go either way. Usually, a male narcissist is a bully when they don't get their way, and a female narcissist is a manipulator. So that's kind of the program back and forth. And when you deal with them, a person, if you've ever dealt with them, they have a spirit influence, and spirits do not deal logically. And a really good narcissist makes the individual, the victim, doubt themselves. Am I sane? Okay, and that's what's going on. In this storyline, okay, and there's a practical thing here in this storyline. If Moses is like a shepherd, and the Lord did call him a shepherd, and he called Israel like a church in the wilderness, so in type, it portrays often church squabbles. And usually it can be traced to one person, no matter how big it is. In this place, Cora. Okay? And so it's interesting, though, that Cora's sons ran away because they knew what dad was like in the home and the other people didn't know. So I find that rather interesting. And this is a thing that we've prayed for years and still do for people, her children, who are under that influence, that they would have discretion and discernment, that they could discern truth from error, especially when both parties' parents claim to be Christians. Because that's where it gets real tough on the child. Okay, so number 16. Now Korah, okay, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi. And then the other one is Dathan. And then Abiram, sons of Eliab. And then An, the son of Peth, the son of Reuben, took men. An. So Korah would be Mo. Okay, Dothan and Abiram would be Curly and Larry, because Moe's always whopping them on the head. And then On is when Shemp got back in the program. Okay, but the ringleader in this is Korah. He's the ringleader. In the Bible, you have this other places, another person like this. You'll find it in the New Testament. A guy named Diotrephes is another character. Diotrephes, it says, he loveth to have the preeminence. So there's another character, so we'll read a little bit about him. And then Paul said, before, when he gave his farewell address to the church of Ephesus in Acts 20, he said that there are going to be grievous wolves within you. Okay, so somebody's going to have frustrated ambition, wants to get in the position. Okay, then they're going to rise up and try to call men after them. Okay, so this church, you know, has experienced this in the past, ups and downs, and kind of watching it from through the eyes of my dad and observing things here through the years, you know, as I was down at Rensselaer, I could see that this church went, you know, had things like this up and down. And I felt sometime in there that the core of this church were very sincere, honest people, Bible believers. They didn't know why they were Bible believers. I felt that if they had someone slowly teach them the truth, that they would accept that. And praise the Lord, that's how it's turned out. I thank God for that. And so when the Lord put me to the position here, I felt I'm going to take pressure off of my dad and Brother Martin, because they were really, they were in essence in a position of a pastor without being a pastor. And you'd be shocked if you read some of the letters my dad received from people in the church. You'd really be surprised. And so that's the process. So this guy named Korah, okay, let's see what he does. Well, in verse 2, we got to look at verse 2 for before we get down to 3. It says, and they, so Korah's a ringleader, okay, and who put Moses in charge? So God is the one that put Moses and Aaron in charge. God is the one that chose them. And Korah had all the evidence that God put them in charge. God is the one that called them. They had all the visual signs. They had all the outward evidences that God wants Moses to be the leader of these people, of the 2 to 3 million people, and then Aaron. But yet Korah is going to go against that idea. They rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly. So he convinced a lot of people. Famous in the congregation, men of renown. Okay, right there, tucked in that little statement, there's the definition of renown. Men of renown. And then what are men of renown? It's the famous people. So if you take men of renown and run that back to Genesis 6:4, you can come up with an idea that the giants were mighty men of renown, so they were the famous people or beings prior to the flood, and so those are the ones that God took out of the way during the flood. So if we transfer that idea to today, possibly famous people are not what we think they are. They may be beyond, maybe more than flesh and blood. Okay, and of course that's a shocker to think about. But the Bible, shall we say, hints at this throughout the Bible. And so what that does is that encourages us, don't put any hope in famous people. No hope in politicians, famous celebrities. I mean, if you knew what these people were really like behind the scenes, you'd want nothing to do with them. Even professional athletes, I mean, it's just amazing. Okay, it's like the WNBA. I mean, the NBA is doing everything they can to prop up that losing proposition. Nobody wants to go to those games. It's a joke. And they're losing money, hands over fists, just to promote a woke agenda. Why? Because they're narcissists. Okay, so you got famous in the congregation, mighty men of renown. Okay, now when we read Korah's words, we take these words in real consideration. And notice how they're subtle. They gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said unto them, ye take too much upon you. Okay, these guys are there to be a benefit to Moses. They're first, oh, Moses, you're taking too much on you. What we can do is we got a knife we'd like to slide in your back so you can be out of your misery and we'll take care of this stuff. In reality, that's what their desire is. He's, oh, you're just got too much on your plate. Like God didn't know that? God put this man in that position because he knew this man could handle it. He had qualified this man. He had put things in this man's life to get him qualified, even though he didn't feel qualified. And then he had the 70 elders that helped him along the way. So there they go. They're acting like we're here for your benefit. And then he says, seeing all the congregation are holy. Really? Didn't God say about that congregation they were stiff-necked and hard-hearted? Wow, this is a guy that's trying to puff up people. This is a guy that is flattering like the Antichrist. And flattery is like perfume. It's nice to smell, but don't swallow it. And so that's how that works. So he says, okay, ye take too much upon you. Interpretation. Actually, I want to be in the position. Korah, I want your job is what I want. Seeing all the congregation of holy, and of course, yeah, they're holy, yeah. Every one of them. Oh, yeah, sure. And the Lord is among them. You know, of course, we know that. That's a no-brainer. That's Captain Obvious. The Lord is among them. Wherefore, then, lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. Whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean you, Moses, you lifted yourself up? I thought it was God that did that. And this is a common accusation, okay? This is what the liberals said about Rush Limbaugh, where all his people listen to him, they're brain dead, and they just do what he says. And of course, he just capitalized on that. You know, then he'd say, you know, with half my brain tied behind my back, you know, and all that stuff, and just mock them as a result of it, when in reality, the leftists are the ones who parrot the ones over them. The conservatives generally are the ones that have thought, try to have an original thought, but is there such a thing from 6,000 years to Adam? I don't know. This is a phenomenon that if you have talk radio, when it became in place, usually the ones who can sustain an audience in talk radio would be conservatives. Liberals couldn't sustain the audience. Remember, there's a Lassiter. There's a guy named Lassiter that was in Chicago. And I used to listen to the tractor, and I'd get so stinking mad at this guy. And he was an extreme liberal, but he didn't last long because Jesse Jackson tried a call-in program. And that didn't last long because they don't have original thought. They don't think. They just parrot what they've been told. Okay, several years ago, some of you may have remember the Grand Kankakee Marsh was trying to have a land grab in this area. Okay, and so they had a big meeting down there at Kankakee Valley School. 500 people shows up, and you can see that the liberal, the guy, had a 20-minute presentation all about the birdies. Oh, we can help the birdies here. We can help the birdies there. And so, and then they allowed people to talk. You had to put your name down if you wanted to talk. I threw mine down, but then I thought, I don't really talk. Well, then they called my name, so... And I kind of got my ducks in a row. But you'd see these country men, these farmers, who would try to reason it out, and they would have forethought, and they would try to give the reasons why. And then these liberals, it would just be, oh, it's for the birds, it's for the trees, it's for the environment. And so then I got my turn. So I had a 3-minute spiel. So I got up there. I said, you know, it sounds like this is strictly for the birds. And all they care about is the birds. They don't care about the people living on the land. If these people want to hug these trees, why don't they buy their own land, get their own trees, and hug their own stinking trees? Instead of trying to steal it from all these people. And I don't remember everything I said. You know, it's a 3-minute spiel. You just try to get everything said in there real quick. And afterwards, you know, some newspaper person came up to me and said, "Something, you know, what's your name, you know, and all that stuff." I said, "I ain't answering any of you newspapers people's questions unless you write it down, and then I'll write the answer. And then I'll put a copyright on it. You put a little C and a circle around it." Okay, and so the person wrote name, address, so I put name on there. And they had, you know, I mentioned in the paper. Okay, and all I was doing was just trying to follow the suit of the conservative people, the people who are trying to maintain their property from being stolen. And fortunately, the people won at that time. They won. They shut that down. Okay, and so these people didn't want to be challenged. So this Korah is like that. Okay, if you would go to Numbers 26, verse 11. And then in Psalm 106, let's try Psalm 106 first. Psalm 106, okay, verse 16. Okay, this says, they envied Moses. Okay, that they, we could see, will be Korah. They envied Moses. And remember, there's another characteristic that Moses had that parallels Jesus, because Pilate knew that the Pharisees delivered Jesus to them for envy. So they envied Moses also in the camp, and Aaron, the saint of the Lord. Isn't that quite a comment about Aaron? The saint of the Lord. The Lord overlooked their Exodus 32, he forgave him for that. Saint of the Lord. And then the outcome. The earth opened and swallowed up Dathan and covered the company of Abiram. And a fire was kindled in their company. The flame burned up the wicked. Okay, so that's the end result of what's going on there. Okay, then I had Numbers 26 and 11. Let's try that one. So this is Numbers 26 is kind of a real quick summary of that event. So in verse 9, the sons of Eliab and all those, this is that Dathan and Abiram, which was famous in the congregation, who strove against Moses and against Aaron in the company of Korah. That's the ringleader. When they strove against the Lord, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah. When that company died, what time the fire devoured 250, and they became a sign, notwithstanding, the children of Korah died not. Wow. See, Korah was, if you can figure this out, Korah was a ringleader. His sons knew what dad was like in the house or in the tent. They knew what he was like. Okay, and then Dathan and Abiram, they just followed the lead of Korah. And so they must have been halfway decent fathers because their kids followed dad's example. And unfortunately, they died. And Korah's boys, they figured it out. They said, oh boy, I know what dad's like. Oh boy, I can see where this is going. And when they saw the punishment coming, they took off. They escaped. And see, they died not. Then if you go into the Psalms, go to Psalm 42 and following. So sometimes a child, once they get to a certain age, they will begin, sometime they will begin to realize, hey, I don't think I need to be putting up with this kind of abuse. I cannot please this man. There's nothing I can do to please this man. And he's angry all the time. And so they give up. Sometimes they get bitter. You have different reactions. Sometimes they get bitter and hard. Sometimes they're hurt. And then they hurt others. Sometimes, because of their bitterness, they grow up to be just like them. Sometimes that happens. But then some, like Korah's sons, ran away. They said, we don't want anything to do with that. And then look in Psalm 42 in the little, where it has Psalm 42 below it in the finer print. The chief musician, Maskil, for the sons of Korah. 43, 44, for the sons of Korah. 45, sons of Korah. 46, 47, 48, 49. Those boys figured it out. And they followed the Lord. They followed the Lord. That's a good testimony to those boys. They figured it out, and they followed the Lord. Now, me personally, okay, again, we were oblivious to this world until, you know, a few years back. Now, looking back on my days at Hiles Anderson, I had three teachers. You know, I thought they were fine men at the time, being naive. All three of them became pastors, okay? And all three turned out to be narcissists. Now, maybe they weren't having that behavior there, but boy, two of them landed in jail. One died in jail. One served his time, is out. But they take no responsibility for their behavior. None whatsoever. I mean, what is that? You can, you know, when there's a struggle or no peace within a situation, you ask a narcissist, well, how much did you contribute to this? The answer will be none. The answer is, I'm a victim. I can't believe this is happening to me. That's what a narcissist will do. An honest person will say, well, here's the problem. A real honest person is going to look in the mirror and say, no doubt the problem lies with you. What did you do? And then work out from there. Okay, in the New Testament, if you would go to 3 John. And this type of behavior, this type of attitude seems to gravitate towards musicians. Sometimes you see it in the operas. Sometimes you see it in professional sports. Politicians, no doubt. Politicians. Preachers, no doubt. Okay, in 3 John verse 9. And this is becoming an epidemic. It's certainly an epidemic. I would say, you know, supposedly 80 million narcissists voted for the king narcissist. But, yeah. So in 3 John verse 9, he bragged about the first Pelagius at the verse, that he was a great blessing. And then in verse 12, Demetrius. So there's our dog. So he's in there. And then this guy is, it's like a sandwich where you got the good wholesome bread here and a good wholesome, and then bologna's in the middle, and that's Diotrephes. It says, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds, which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith. So this person has frustrated ambition. They want the prestige, what they think is prestige of serving God, and God is not giving them the time of the day. And they have no fruit involved. Okay, not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren. So he's going to put this person out, forbidding them that they would, and casteth them out of the church. So this guy is a dude that's readily to boot somebody out who disagrees with him. I mean, just get rid of him. No questions asked. Gone. You're out of here. Okay, and then he said, Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Okay, a doctrine for the tribulation. But there it is, verse 9 and 10. And I tell you, in the church, these are a dime a dozen. And that's what Laodicea is about. And so what we can do is we can learn from these things and then respond properly. And usually the proper response, if you read through Proverbs, look up the word scorner and follow the advice of a scorner. I don't know if a scorner is the same as a narcissist, but the behavior, the reaction towards them is very similar. Okay, it's following the response to a scorner. So back in verse 3 of number 16, there's so much can be said, but a person can learn a lot of this, like I said. There are a few books out there on narcissism, but there's a lady named Patricia Evans has written some very good books on this. Okay, and it's amazing that when in a certain individual situation, so we'll talk in code here, when we discovered this and they decided to leave the situation, we're in a library and she finds a book by Patricia Evans and it's titled Verbal Abuse, A Verbally Abusive Relationship. And about page 3 or 4, it had 10 characteristic or 10 qualifiers that a person, they said, if a person reads these 10, if you remember 3 or 4 of these in your own personal life, then you have suffered from verbal abuse. And this person remembered 9 out of the 10. And the only reason the 10th one wasn't in the qualifiers because there was a time limit to it. And so she could have said 10 out of 10. And so that was just, you know, just finding that in the library. It's like the Lord said, okay, here, you got a problem you're dealing with. Try to overcome this here. Grab this book off this shelf. Spirit of God kind of leads a person, grabs this book off, and then starts reading it. And you can see the tears coming. And then you can read it. And then you buy about 5 of those books, and you read it, and you study it, and then you learn to react properly. And then a book tells you, you're not crazy. You're not nuts. You feel like you're the nuts. You feel, why does that respond? I don't understand why that kind of response with that. That don't make sense to me. And she wrote it out. And it was very, very helpful through the years. And so a person learns how to deal with these things. And the Lord, through all these years, has had people cross our path where we could honestly and sincerely say we understand because we've experienced it. Now, personally, I would rather have read it in a book. Okay? And sadly, this should be taught in schools, in schools of ministry. It should be taught because it's becoming an epidemic. It's an amazing epidemic that's happening in our country. So this guy, Korah, he's quite an interesting study. Verse 4, Moses, as an amazing man, an amazing leader, and a meek man, as the Lord had him write, responds this way. He heard it, he fell on his face. He spake unto Korah and all his company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will show who are his and who is holy, and who will cause him to come near unto him. Even him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. And so then what Moses is going to do, he's going to lay out a contest that he can't rig, he can't pull the strings, and Moses is directly appealing to God to intervene in this matter, because Moses, you see, a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, the average stay of a pastor in a church is 2 to 3 years. And there's a couple reasons for that. Okay, now if that's the Lord's calling for a person's life, okay, that's different. But the average stay is, one is there's a spiritual wall that a pastor will hit in that 2 or 3 year time span that he will feel like he's done. He feels like nobody's listened to him. It's a waste of time. He's a worthless piece of trash. He just might as well throw in the towel and go start someplace else. Okay, that's a feeling. Now, if they work through it, the wonderful Lord will give them a second wind to keep going. It's a wind you feel in sports. Okay, but another reason is that sometimes there's a Korah in the congregation that just keeps needling the pastor. And it's like when you get one stone in your shoe. That's all you can think about is that stone in your shoe. And that's all they could think about. How can I get rid of this stone in my shoe? And they forget the 20 or 30 or 40 sincere people that want them to be there. And they just try to get that stone out of their shoe, and unfortunately, they may leave a place where they're supposed to stay. And I, looking back on our life, I think that there was a fine man in a church that we were a part of that's what happened to him. And sadly, for the rest of his life, he just kind of floundered. The vast majority in the church supported this man, loved this man, wanted this man to keep going. But that one stone in his shoe just kept just getting in his heel, kept bothering him. And he felt his time was up. And it wasn't. It wasn't. And so that's a part of what Korah does. And a person has to step back and think about the people that you are real a blessing to, and they're a blessing to you. Okay, so we'll stop there and come back to verse 4. And I'd like to, Edward, you can go ahead and stop that.